Hello, thanks for tuning in to another exciting episode of the Radio Academy podcast for all things audio. I'm your host, Hayley Hayes. In today's episode, we have two fantastic guests joining us, the talented Michaela Hallam and Neil Cowling, both from the renowned Fresh Air production. If you're not familiar with Fresh Air, they've been at the forefront of the radio industry for years, crafting captivating shows that have graced national airwaves. But they have embarked on a new journey, pivoting their focus exclusively towards creating brand-funded podcasts. Here, they share insights into their creative process, the challenges they've overcome, and the exciting world of brand-funded podcasting. So sit back, relax, and let's dive in.
Wendy's presents The Burger Files, lifting the bun on burger crime. All the burger crimes depicted in The Burger Files actually happened and are based on genuine customer experiences of burger crimes which have been shared in public on social media. The experiences have been restaged by reasonably priced actors. Names and haircuts have been changed to protect the identities of the burger victims.
Michaela and I are from Fresh Air Production. Fresh Air for many years was a normal radio indie, making shows for the BBC and lots of promotions. And Michaela and I met when we worked at the BBC. And then 5 or 6 years ago, Fresh Air decided to concentrate very heavily on podcasts and specifically on branded podcasts. So we are the UK's leading producer of podcasts for brands. That's what we do. And we have a core team of about 12 people and a wider team, including all the freelancers, of about 30, and we're based in King's Cross in North London. Our mission really is to take the values and the production standards that we were used to creating for national radio and take them into the commercial space. So we spend all day long really helping brands to tell their stories in audio to the quality that you would expect if you were listening to a national radio station.
How do you stop a branded podcast just sounding like an advert for the brand?
That's the conversation we have all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that brands are aware that if they make something that's essentially a 20-minute ad for the brand, then people aren't going to get to the end of the episode, let alone episode 2 or series 2. We always say that the clients are the expertise in what they do and their business and their brand, but we're the experts in telling stories and audio and keeping people engaged. So it's a collaboration, understanding the story that they want to tell and the audience that they want to tell it to, but finding a way of doing that that is exactly not a 20-minute ad. And that's where kind of the format conversations come in.
Quite a bold decision to say we're not doing radio or broadcast anymore. How did that conversation go?
Well, the opportunity kind of presented itself in 2016. We sort of stumbled into making podcasts by, I had a contact at the National Trust, and we decided to try and persuade the National Trust to go into podcasting, and we did, and they're now churning podcasts out all over the place. So they were a really brilliant first client, and it showed us that you could persuade brands to pay for podcasts up front rather than the sort of standard model at the time, and often now, of course, which is to make a podcast on a kind of speculative basis and hope that it paid for itself. But as a small company, and certainly a small company that was used to working for the BBC, obviously when you do that work, you're guaranteed to be paid. And so making podcasts for brands seemed like the model that worked to me, to us, that because you could persuade people to commission you almost like a radio station might commission you. It wasn't a conscious decision to stop doing radio, but just as the demand built up and as we built a reputation for making podcasts for brands, and as the work came in, to be honest, the revenue and the margins from making podcasts for brands were better, and it felt like a more entrepreneurial route to go down to try and exploit that opportunity rather than continue making radio. And so gradually the radio kind of faded away and the podcast took over.
And Michaela, I know you've had quite a varied career. How do you see your role in making those relationships work between you and the client?
My role previous to this was head of audio at BBC Creative, which is the BBC's in-house advertising agency. And that was always about telling stories in audio for marketing purposes, but to quite targeted audiences. So it might be that it's the Olympics, but you had to make sure that you told it in a way that either resonated with Radio 4 or Radio 1 or 1 Extra, and kind of being really clear about those audiences and the sorts of things that would resonate specifically with them. And I think those tools and skills are completely transferable. We're just going from what ended up being a 10-second or 5-second trail on Radio 1 to the luxury of now 20 to 30 minutes of storytelling time in the podcasting world. And my role is to work with those brands and businesses to understand what the story they want to tell is and how to do that in an engaging way for their target audience. And we kind of see it a little bit as it's a partnership, but also a critical friend. They know, like I said at the start, what their business is. I can't begin to understand their business better than they do. But we're the experts in audio storytelling and engaging audio storytelling for specific target audiences. And so it's working together to find a format that does that in a compelling way. We were the Audio Production Company of the Year, and the judges said that we had a really great combination of creative flair and commercial nous. And I think that's what we come back to every time. It's kind of understanding that this has a commercial goal that needs to be fulfilled, but we need to do that with creative flair in order to get listeners to episode two, and quite honestly, to mutual objective of series two for everybody. It's not about making vanity projects, because that's going to do nobody any good. So it's about making sure that we create a format that's unique to that brand, that shows them in a way that another brand couldn't do. It's their kind of special sauce. And the really exciting thing for me, and again, kind of talking about those transferable skills from the BBC, is it's the first time that a lot of these brands have considered what they sound like. They're really clear on what they look like, but how do they come to life in audio? What's their personality? And a really great part of working with the brands is getting to the place where they're really distinctive in the world of audio, the world of sound.
Did you just apply for the role, or did you two guys meet?
We used to work together when I was at the BBC in what was called the Crosstrails team at that point, making radio Crosstrails to promote the BBC's content across the portfolio of radio stations. So yeah, we go back a very long way.
Yeah, I think we've always had that kind of telepathy that you have with a really close colleague and someone that you gel with really, really closely, because we have very similar approaches to what we think is good and very similar ideas of what we want to achieve. Yes, you're right. The background that Michaela and I both have, because, you know, we spent years making trailers for EastEnders or Strictly or the Olympics or World Cups, those sorts of skills, although they were done within the BBC, so ostensibly a public service background, they were really transferable into the commercial world. And as soon as Fresh Air started expanding and started growing in this podcast space, there was really only one person that I wanted to come and work with me, and she took the jump, which I will always be very grateful for.
But I think it's an opportunity to kind of show people how amazing the audio space can be, and to challenge perceptions of it, and to show that it can do things that no other communication channel can do, that you can't do in video and you can't do in a blog or a written article. And for me, it was just I wanted to take on that challenge and make podcasting for brands as great as podcasts that exist that aren't sponsored by brands or businesses.
So you've both got very strong, long careers in audio, so you get it. But how do you help brands who are maybe more traditional but have never done podcasting or any kind of audio before? How do you get them to spend their marketing budget on a podcast where previously they might have spent that money on a billboard or traditional print advertising?
Well, thankfully, the first thing is that most people who work in marketing now listen to podcasts. So if I go back even just 6 or 7 years, I had to start most conversations by explaining what a podcast was. So thankfully, that doesn't happen anymore. So that's part of the job done, because so many people now are fans of podcasts and understand why they're special. They might not think that hard about it, but they understand why they listen to a podcast instead of watching a video. And that's all to do with nuance and depth and detail. And, you know, in a week like this week, when the politics is so mad and the world seems so confusing, so many people turn to podcasts to try and pick their way through the detail and the nuance of the story. And that's the same with brands. All brands have a story to tell of some sort, whether that's because they want to be thought leaders in their space, or they want to address a particular audience, or they want to show a side of the brand that people don't appreciate. And so the way that we sell podcasts and really sort of talk about audio is all about that attention that you have from people. You know, when people are going to choose to spend 25 minutes listening to what your brand has to say to them, that's really special. And it's something that brands don't get from a billboard, and they don't get from a blog or a video. People don't spend 25 minutes, you know, reading a blog from a brand. They understand that if you create something that listeners genuinely want to hear, and it gives the essence of the brand and it makes them appreciate the brand differently, or frankly, just thankful, grateful to the brand for having created it, then you're building a space in their lives and you're making them engage with you in a way that they wouldn't otherwise. And the other element is that community, is the relationship that you can build in podcasts that, again, is very difficult for a brand to build elsewhere. So we go through these kind of the aspects of audio and the selling points of audio that many people haven't considered before. Again, they know why they enjoy it. They instinctively love radio, or they instinctively love podcasts. And they might not have thought that they could do that as a piece of brand communication, but they really can.
I think the other thing is that the amazing thing about audio, in that every person that listens to that exact same podcast paints a different picture in their mind. And so it's almost kind of creating a unique experience for every single one of those listeners. And you kind of create a film and you cast it and you put somebody in it. And that might not be relatable to every single one of those listeners, but you have a conversation, and be that two people in a room, or be that a piece of fiction, or be that a narrative documentary. And everybody takes their own personal references and applies that to that. So it makes it a much more bespoke and tailored experience as well.
So of course, we're all audio geeks, which is great. But all the big podcasts, if you look at Diary of a CEO, they actually say it's petered out now quite evenly between people who watch on YouTube and people that listen traditionally. Are you getting pushed by brands to make it visual?
I think that we would be hugely naive to kind of be really audio purists and say, no, this is entirely an audio product and we're not going to look at video. The simple answer is yes. I think that we need to understand how video works and why it's important and how it can relate to the podcast. And that's scalable. It might be that the format is one that would work brilliantly as a full length video, and that's great. It might be that you're doing something on location and out on the road where you can create some amazing promotional assets from the video that are the teaser elements. I think it's about understanding where your audience are and not being vain enough to think that they're going to come and find you whatever platform you are. You need to be where that audience is. And if that audience is on YouTube, then you need to create content for them on YouTube. I mean, YouTube now have their own podcast URL. They're looking at podcasts as a viable and very serious part of the business. So yes, we do make video assets almost a standard for every one of our podcasts. But whether that's a really simple audiogram or whether that's a full length YouTube video depends on the objectives, the audience, and quite honestly, budget as well. Because I think that when brands come to us, they think about the production of a podcast from the production budget perspective. But you can make the most amazing content, but without your target audience knowing that it exists, then they're not going to find it. So it's about understanding that you also need to consider the promotional strategy around the content you're making. And part of that promotional strategy is, more often than not, video assets that will then take you from wherever platform you are, ideally back to the podcast platform of choice.
And we try and control our audio snobbery. As you say, you know, we are audio geeks and a lot of the time audio snobs. And so we think that audio is special, and it is.
It is special.
But we mustn't ignore video, because, as you say, that's where the audience are. The flip side of that, though, is that it's still an audio-first product. And a podcast, otherwise you might as well just go and make a video and take the sound off it. So you have to think of audio first. How are people without the pictures going to listen to this? And how are we going to make the most of audio as a medium, because it's great and because you want people who are listening on headphones to have a perfect experience? And then the video is the side product of that, is the byproduct of that, rather than it being video first and audio second.
How do you then resource that? So when you're looking for producers, are you now hiring video producers, or are you hiring audio producers who can do a bit of video?
I think the way that Fresh Air operates is that we're really clear that we've got an amazing group of radio producers, be they staff or freelancers, and we match the producer to the project so that they either have skills or passions that align with the brand and the story that brand wants to tell. But going back to that flairy nous bit, the creative flair and the commercial nous, part of the commercial side of it is that we've got a really brilliantly strong marketing arm of the business, led by Richard Blake, our director of marketing. And that is where we employ people with the skills needed to make those promotional assets. And so we'll always pull together a bespoke team based on the client, on the project, on the budget, to make sure that, as Neil said, we're not going to compromise on the audio side of things because we've got an amazing audio producer who's going to help us tell that story and create a format that does that well. But right from the get-go, we've also got the people in place, be they in studio producers who can create the video or be they people that we can take out on location and create assets. It's understanding the objectives and us assembling that team to meet that from the start. So most of the time, we've got audio producers and video producers on a project rather than one person doing everything.
I think it would be naive, though, to say that if you're starting out in podcast production now, having video skills is a real advantage. I think, you know, as Michaela says, the skills are distinct and you don't become an audio producer by being a video producer and turning the video off and vice versa. But if you can have both sets of skills or at least know your way around Adobe Premiere to start with, then that's definitely an advantage for a producer.
So at the top of this, I played a bit of Burger Files, which is one of your podcasts that you create for Wendy's. Do you want to just tell me a bit more about the experience of creating that and also just how you started building the ideas with the brand?
It's one of the most joyful things we've ever made, Burger Files, because I think sometimes when we say we're a podcast company for brands, everybody thinks that we're going to be just doing head-to-head interviews with men in suits. And then a brief comes through like this that completely disproves that. So we were briefed by the creative agency, VMLY&R, who worked for Wendy's. And actually, this started out 2 years ago as an idea. Wendy's have a brilliant social personality. They're one of those brands who really know how they speak. And they're really funny and they're really playful and brave. So they wanted to create something equally funny and playful and brave in the podcast world. And they came up with this idea of creating a spoof true crime podcast about burgers and about the crimes that happen in burger restaurants. Not actual crimes, but burger crimes. So we all turn up now and again when we're a bit tired or drunk and we have a burger and it's a bit cold or
it's inevitably disappointing.
Yeah. And it's not actual nice food that you're proud to have eaten, but you put up with it and you walk away and you don't complain. You just go, oh, that was a bit crap, but I'll be back there in a couple of weeks' time. What Wendy's want to do is show that you don't have to put up with that, that Wendy's as a brand is sort of a level above giving you something cold or stale or rubbish. We created this series with a brilliant, we didn't want to create something that was half-hearted or that was cheesy or that, again, going back to our original statement of what we do, we want to create something that is a broadcast standard that's genuinely funny. So a piece of comedy needed a great comedy writer. And we worked with Joel Morris, who created lots of Charlie Brooker stuff. He created Philomena Kunk. He's got an amazing track record, worked on Paddington films.
All the grown-up Lady Bird books that are all the pastiche stuff. So, I mean, that kind of history of turning something that we know already with the grammar of something we already know and turning it on its head and turning it into comedy was something that he had a brilliant track record in.
And then we worked with Mighty Bunny, who are a superb comedy production company working largely for Radio 4. It's something we're really proud of because it pushes boundaries and because it's just something that I don't think it's been
done before for a brand in that way. But also, it kind of goes back to your point at the start again about not making a 20-minute advert. They had a really clear insight that people put up, me included, because it's a universal insight, with burgers that are often quite disappointing when you've built it up as this treat. And so you kind of take that as the insight and then you riff off that to create a really engaging and creative format that people like listening to in its own right and that will stand up competitively against other podcasts in the market that aren't brand funded.
I should also mention the cast, Sarah Barron, who plays Nina Noonan, the investigative reporter who's obsessed with burger crime. You know, Sarah is just a brilliant, brilliant comic actress and really, again, just got it. And the fact that it's for a brand obviously influences some of the narrative, obviously influences some of the decisions that we make. But fundamentally, it's just a really good piece of comedy. And that's why we're proud of it.
You're proud of it and it sounds great. But how does a brand measure the success of the investment? What metrics do you use to be able to show the brand that this worked?
Right at the start, we set up with Rich, our director of marketing, all of the clear KPIs. So how we are going to prove that we've delivered at the end of the day. And we've got loads of different metrics that we can use to do that. Reach, there's brand perception studies to see whether or not we have actually, if that's the goal in the first place, changed the perception of something. We did a brilliant podcast for Avon a few years ago where they just wanted to change perception of the brands as being kind of, for, can I say this, makeup for grannies, in one sense, to say, actually, no, this is a modern brand with modern brand values. Loads of other stuff like listen through rate. That's my personal favourite. You make something, if people switch off after 2 minutes, then there's no point. We want to make sure that people have listened to the majority of that podcast to prove that the content that we've created is engaging the audience in the right way.
And then there's cost per minute of attention. And that's often a really powerful tool to go back to the brands with, of saying you've had this many minutes of listening. Because actually, even if it's quite a niche podcast, when you take the number of minutes multiplied by the number of downloads, you get to really big numbers very quickly. And brands are suddenly saying, well, hang on a moment, we've had 3 years worth of listening to this product. That's something, again, that's very difficult for them to either measure elsewhere or get elsewhere, frankly, to get people hanging around for that amount of time. And that enables us to show, you know, you spent this amount of money, you got this amount of listening. And sometimes it's as much as 1p, 2p a minute that these brands have paid to have a whole minute of someone's dedicated one-to-one headphone immersed time with this brand. And that's an extraordinary thing.
Oh, we can do a comparison with that, that kind of shows the equivalent of a 30-second ad on morning TV. We can demonstrate that actually, and that's when they're kind of going to make a cup of tea or second screening. We can prove then that that money spent is actually better value for money in a really kind of engaged listen.
One final question, because I've probably kept you far too long. Where do you see the future of branded podcasts heading? I'm just thinking about things like AI, the rise of influencers, brands that are brands just in their own right on social media, not necessarily shops or tangible assets. Do you look to expand what you do, or do you think you'll stick with the traditional brand partnerships?
I think as long as we keep our radar open and we keep ourselves open to the possibilities and opportunities, then anything is possible almost. Like Neil's just said, there are models that we won't even have thought of. I think what is really, really key, though, is that we keep being true and authentic. And if we're using a TikToker, for example, then we're not trying to make them do something that their listeners or their audience know that they wouldn't normally do, because then that comes across as really inauthentic and people are going to know, okay, this is an advert, I don't believe what you're telling me. We worked recently with Auto Trader, we worked with a lot of Instagrammers and TikTokers and YouTubers, and what we wanted to do is collaborate with them to make content that was true to their existing style and their audience would understand is authentic to them. But I think authenticity, open to possibilities, collaboration, and again, the opportunities are endless.
I think we're seeing more sophistication in how both audiences and brands approach podcasts. Brands are coming with more budget and they are understanding that you can't just make a podcast without promoting it. So our sort of rule of thumb is you should spend as much on promoting a podcast as you do on production. And a few years ago, we were hands up making vanity projects for one or two people who had a bit of money to spend, wanted to try a podcast. And if it didn't work, it wasn't the end of the world. And that's no longer the case. Podcasts are central to a brand's comms strategy in the same way that video or blogging used to be.
How do we keep in touch with Fresh Air?
Well, LinkedIn is the platform that we do the most on.
Neil writes a weekly newsletter as well that you can subscribe to on our website, freshairproduction.co.uk. And that is a mixture of podcast recommends, what the team's been listening to, and updates of things that are going on in the podcast sector and the podcast market, and also just a little bit of
nonsense
quite honestly, about us and the team.
And I'd need to wish you luck at the upcoming APAs as well. Just remind me what you're nominated for.
We are nominated for Production Company of the Year. You won't be able to miss us. There's at least 20 of us being quite noisy, and we're only there for one category, which is the last category of the night. So by the time it comes around to ours, we will be
more noisy
than we were at the start.
Big thanks to Neil and Michaela for their time today. Just a quick note to let you know about the upcoming Radio Academy AGM. It will be a hybrid meeting in person in London or an online option via Zoom. For those in London, we'll be having a social event after. It's all happening on Tuesday, the 12th of December, and you can get your tickets on our website, radioacademy.org. Whilst you are on our website, don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter so you don't miss out on any Radio Academy news or events. Take care, and I'll catch you next time.